Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a fellow YPO, a very successful businessman from Hong Kong, Mr. Bernard Aoyang. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Bernie is the CEO of the Computime Group. He's the founder of Vida Nova, a direct investment company focusing on media, electronics, and tech companies. He's the founder of the Altus Zenus Group, a global brand and product company. He's the recipient of the Young Industrial Awards, Hong Kong, and the Hong Kong Young Industrial, and he's a Hong Kong Young Industrial Ambassador. And as I mentioned earlier, he's a fellow YPO member. So, Bernie, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Well, I think the three key milestones, first will be the decision to come back from the U.S. Mm-hmm. and join the family business in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Then the second one would be about 2009, I make a decision to leave the family business and started a life as an entrepreneur. Then, of course, everything goes around in circle. And the decision last year to come back to join Computime and combine some of my business together with my family business and have another opportunity, another go at it.
Fantastic. So let's talk about Computime. Tell me about this organization. When did it start and what are you doing these days?
Right. So we are a technology and manufacturing company focusing mainly on IoT and smart controls. The company was started by my father in 1974. So this is our 47th year.
And it
was started as a digital clock manufacturer. That's why it's called Computime, by the way. So it's an interesting origin. We are now listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange since 2006. We have about 5,000 staff around the world in 14 locations, manufacturing, R&D centers, sales, warehouses. We have three businesses. The first business is called Control Solutions, which is OEM, ODM, electronic business. We have the second business is a B2B branded business selling heating, ventilation, air conditioning products to professional markets. And then we also have a company start working on a B2C branded business selling smart home products to consumer via online and also traditional channels.
And, you know, you said that you this was started 47 years ago and, as you know, has obviously built many, many brands. With the kind of experience that you have and you have within the company, what goes into building a global electronic brand?
Well, of course, it's changed a lot over the years, right? But today, when I look back at it, I would say four things, right? One, I think the team and the ecosystem is critical, right? You need to have that offer to cover your ecosystem or to at least make sure whether not only you maybe on your team, but also you can procure some of the services, but you have to offer the whole ecosystem. The team is critical, as you know. People who are professional have that expertise in the area. It is impossible to ask a manufacturing guy to build a brand, and it's impossible to ask a brand guy to run a manufacturing facility. So I always use a simple example, right? For a manufacturing guy, it's always a cost-plus solution, right? They calculate all the costs and then what money we make. The other way around, when you build a distribution business, is actually always start with the market price and work down. So if you have the same people running it, it would be major confusion. The second part, of course, is what you do with the brand itself. Whether you license a brand, whether you build your own brand. Now, in the old days, you can procure the TV spot, you can procure the big billboard and do a lot of advertising. Today, it's all digital. So you really need to how to get your brand in front of the customer, but also to the younger generation, what does the brand mean is critical. There's a social mission behind this. And then the third part, which I think is critical to me, is differentiating the products. Why pick your products? What is in your product that's different from the guy next door? There are thousands of factories in China, in Vietnam, in Malaysia doing this thing. Why do they pick you, right? And the last, I think, is you have a very clear idea of your value proposition on your products. How much, what are you paying for? Are you paying for just value, very cheap, high-end luxury, the brand, what does it, are you giving people lifetime warranty with the price you're giving? So I see a lot of people not being very clear on the pricing strategy they're looking at and what value they're proposing attaching to that price. So I would think those, in my opinion, those are the four key issues or areas, you know, building a brand.
So, you know, let me talk about some of them with you. I'm assuming manufacturing you do in China.
Not only China. China, Vietnam, Malaysia, and then we're building a new facility in Mexico as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're manufacturing globally.
Yeah.
And you know, which are some of your bigger products? TVs and something else?
Yeah, well, our main products are a few areas. Smart controls are mostly in the smart home products that would go into IoT products for smart homes. Those are big for us. Anything from controlling temperature, security, sensors, and stuff like that. Those are big for us.
Okay.
Another one we do mostly for OEM, ODM, appliance controls. So we actually supply the controls for most of the big appliance manufacturers.
Okay.
And then we also do industrial controls for machineries, for equipments. Those are higher end. So most of our stuff are not really consumer grade. They're more industrial grade products.
And you probably, and the second point you mentioned was to have great people. You must have got some amazing design people who are constantly, you know, coming up with newer ideas.
Yes, yes. I think it's critical to have our own in-house capability, but also a network of people you work with procuring their services. And sometimes it gets stale, right? When you, how many new design of a thermostat can you draw on? All right? Same concept.
Correct.
So we do go around and use different teams, but we also have our core team. But the key thing I always notice is not only about, you know, the ID, it's actually now extended a lot more in terms of usability, the UI, the engineering and the manufacturing possibility all have to be thought through in the initial process, or else you can go into a product deep in and then figure out it doesn't work. We adopt a process called design thinking, which is really a combination of technical feasibility, of market feasibility and financial feasibility. We do that in a very rapid manner. So we can choose or discard or not, or choose to proceed with the project in a very short period of time. And that's the philosophy we use throughout the company.
Quite
so
amazing.
I always tell people, I use, you know, sometimes just get some paper and make a prototype and see how it looks like. And it doesn't look too sexy, but at the end of the day, you need to start each process with that. Now, of course, with the 3D printing and everything right now, things happen a lot quicker.
I can imagine. And, you know, you spoke about how the digital space is changing marketing. You know, from the, you go back, you know, 15, 18 years ago when you started, it was these big magazines and you know, advertisements and on television, etc. And now it's all digital. How are you handling your brand in the digital space?
Well, it's interesting. I'll tell you the funny thing is now the marketing team is a lot younger. That's the one thing. Right. You're hiring people who, old fart like me, we step back and kind of look at what we want to achieve, but we don't tell them what to do. They know much better what to do and what to write.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, you know, the number one thing to make a brand succeed in a digital world is really you have to accept that the sales channel is totally different now. In the old days, you can sell to a Home Depot or Lowe's and a Walmart, you're done, right? Once they have that distribution. Now you have to sell to Amazon, of course, but also the .com of the world. And I'm the type who believe if you only sell to brick and mortar but not have a brick and mortar plus digital strategy, you it would not work. So it's critical to have that mindset to sell to both and understand how you do your product strategy and how you do your pricing strategy. Because the second part, which is critical, is that pricing becomes transparent. Everyone can compare your price now online. You want to buy something, you type it on, you get 10 different results and 10 different suppliers. So how do you get that done? Now, the third thing, of course, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, is how to get your brand in front of the consumers. In the old days, traditional marketing method. Now, it's all social media. And also, the meaning of the brand to younger people is extremely important. Things such as sustainability, you know, using the material, what is your profit going to, and all these different things become a reason to exist for a brand. And then last but not least is the review.
Okay.
You basically live or die by that. right? So in the old days, okay, you sell something, someone may have a complaint, they, you know, send it back to you, you replace the unit. Mm. Now, everything happens right away. Someone buy a unit, they open the box, it doesn't work, you're done, you know? And we actually have team monitor, you know, those reviews and work with customers directly.
Mm. Very interesting.
So those are the few things I would do.
Very, very interesting. So one more question relating to your to CompuTime before the next section. You mentioned, you know, on the design side, et cetera, you've got a young group of people who are doing a lot of things. From a market perspective, it's the millennials and the Gen Zs who are probably big buyers of your products, you know, whether it's the IoT products or any of the other home improvement products. What is your view on how the millennials and the Gen Zs are changing your marketing?
I'm still figuring it out. But obviously, you need to have, well, first, as I mentioned, you have a team of people who talk the same language, right? By the way, let me rewind a little bit. Of course, the next generation is clearly the target audience for us when we build things. However, it doesn't mean people my age in the late 40s, early 50s are not target, right? Because now life expectancy is a lot longer.
Correct.
And these are people like myself who are digital immigrant. We actually now use mobile phone for everything. So in my business, they are target audience for sure, right? And so we actually need to work with that sector as well.
Yeah.
But going back to the young ones, we of course need people who know how to talk to them, who are very familiar with concepts such as digital media, social media, KOL reviews, and all these different things. Sales channel, how to get the products to people. And for example, I'll tell you, you know, logistic, right? In the old days, you drive a car to buy something, you expect it to get to your home and then you open it. Now, if it's not there, you go back a few days later because supply chain may not be ready. Right. Now you expect Amazon in the US mostly. You order in the morning, you're supposed to get it in the afternoon.
True.
And if you don't like it, you return it right away, right? So you that expectation setting, how to fulfill your supply chain, how to get the marketing message right, how to make sure the channel has been well represented, you know, the content on Amazon. You need to have special people write that content to have A plus content for your target audience. Is no longer just having someone in Hong Kong writing something and hopefully the Americans will understand it.
Very interesting.
You need the native speaker at that age group to do that.
So. Well said. So, buddy, let's move to the next part of our conversation, which is some, you know, you as a strategic investor in Vida Nova. What do you look for before you make an investment?
Well, so as you said, I'm not a traditional financial investor. So I do not just, you know, pay money, take a small stake and do it. Everything we do, especially now that we combine a lot of work with CompuTime, my family business, is that I have to be a strategic investor. So I'm also adding value to the investee besides money. Right?
Okay.
So there are really four things I always ask. Very simple. One is why. What is the strategic intent? You know, why are you buying that business? The second thing is who. To me, it's all about the people, right? If certain business model doesn't work, if the person is good, they'll always find a way out. That's a good entrepreneur for me. The what? What's the value of the investment? How do you can use all these different modeling methods, mathematical, academic method that you use. But these days, you and I know, most of them are not very relevant to the present day evaluation model. Things got a little bit better now, but, you know, it's challenging. But the last is how to structure the deal, right? So I always look at that because I do have to present to my board or to the investment committee when I look at a deal. If I cannot answer myself on all those four things, it's not a deal for me.
Very well said. And, you know, between CompuTime and Vida Nova and all the other stuff that you're doing, what would you say are some of the core values you believe in?
Well, I've been thinking a lot about it recently. You know, that's the good thing about COVID, by the way. You're not flying. You figure out you actually have time to think through a lot of reflection. I think there are really four things that I live by. I think the number one thing is integrity. In any business, without that, there's no trust, and no trust, there's no business, right? We all make our mistakes in life. That's how it is. But at the end of the day, what's your intent when you do something? Was it to hurt someone, or was it something that you intend to get things done? So that's number one, I would think. The second one, I spent a lot of time on the teams, because to me, I'm not a maverick. I'm not someone who can work by myself, face the computer and make 100% decision by myself and everyone follow. That's just not me. So collaboration is key. But I've been talking to my team about the concept of an A-team. Mm-hmm. Now, Jack Welch in the old days would say every year you're 5, 10 to 15% of your bottom people. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in that. But I do believe, you know, every team, if you want to be an A-team, you need to look at your weakest link. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with your weakest link? Whether you develop someone, you replace someone, you work with someone. Mm-hmm. So one thing I learned a lot recently is this whole concept of talent density.
Okay.
So if you do not have the right people, you have a low talent density. Doesn't matter how good your business model is. Right. Doesn't matter. Execution will be terrible.
Right.
So that's the second part. Is I always emphasize collaboration within the A team.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing is innovation. Mm-hmm. Right. I always believe in solving problem, but thinking out of the box to solve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now that does not necessarily mean technology. That also means the way we do things, the way we look at things, the desired outcome, which is very different now than 10 years ago or before iPhone came around, right? So that's the third thing I look at. And the other core value, which I really stuck by, I stick it on my wall here, is simplify complicated things.
Okay.
I just don't have a brain that can handle complicated things. If I cannot explain something to someone in 5 words, then it's probably not a good model or good things to have. So I think one of the key values to me is clarity, right? You need to have that simple understanding to get things done, because I'm not that type of guy who will go around in circle and say, you know, some people are very good at that. I'm not. So one of my values is just get to the point and get things done.
Well said. So, Bernie, I'm now going to move to some questions or comments from you on YPO, an organization you and I both belong to. You know, you have been the international chairman of YPO, you know, led the organization right from the front. My first question is that what has made you give back so much to YPO?
Mm-hmm. Well, because I got a lot out of it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a simple answer. But I also, for selfishly, as an individual, my spare time, I could go and, you know, play tennis, drive a car, spend time with my family, read a book. So every time I do something within an organization, I want to learn something. I want to get something back from it. Not necessarily money or fame. I don't really care about that. It's really about, as a person, how do I grow and develop? What else do I get from it? And from YPO, I actually learn a lot. And that's why I'm willing to give back. And each level I go, besides knowing people, which is I would call it a fringe benefit. I learn things such as managing peers. I learn things how to run a board. I learn things how to make a difference with a very short period of time. I also learn how to herd cattles. A lot of people with different opinions, you know, and some of them have very different agenda than yours. How do you get everyone together to get things done for bigger? How to be a servant leader, for example, right? So all these things I actually gain a lot as a result of it. So giving my time a little bit back is a no-brainer.
Wonderful. And therefore, a follow-up question on that would be, why should a young CEO consider joining YPO?
So, well, first, absolutely, you should join YPO. This is something that I can vouch for. As a young CEO when I joined, I was in 34 when I joined YPO. So, you know, been in the organization for almost 20 years. I've gained so much. So I guess the number one reason is, do you want to learn and grow and develop? If you do, this is an organization. You can go in and find so many different ways to do that.
Correct.
From, I would say, an event, from a talking head, from an experience you immerse in, from taking a leadership role within the organization, your forum. There's so many ways to learn, right? So this is one thing. If you're a learner, this is the place to go.
Wonderful.
Second, most of us as entrepreneurs, we as CEOs, we basically manage through a vertical chain and structure.
Correct.
Well, learning how to manage peers is a skill that you rarely can obtain. So by putting myself immersed in this organization as part of the leadership group, I'm able to learn the very unique and special skill that comes to the very handy, especially when you start running boards and joining boards and other things in your career. The last thing which I found critical is my forum.
Oh.
And I use this analogy quite a bit. My forum is the mirror, a window, and a door.
Mm.
So it's a mirror because it helps me by being a mirror to look at myself.
Mm.
Right? I would see things that I would think certain ways. I talk to these guys, they're like, come on, Bernie, you know better than this.
Mm.
It's a window because in many conversations I have, and confidential basis, of course, they actually let me see opportunities outside of my comfort zone, right? Just seeing them sometimes get my brain thinking. And then the last part is the door. Not only seeing, but sometimes I actually, through them, I need to experience, connect, or even possess, you know, certain experience.
Yeah.
And that to me is absolutely critical. Absolutely critical.
Fantastic.
And so, yeah, no, I think those are the few reasons any young CEO should consider joining this.
Absolutely. You know, you couldn't have explained this better. I joined YPO when I was 35, and I've been in the organization for 28 years, you know, so, and it's the only organization I've belonged to for such a long time, nonstop, you know, so.
Right.
So let me now move to the last segment of our conversation, which are some questions for you personally. Bernie, when you look back at life and, you know, you've achieved so much, you've done so much. From where you sit today, what does success mean to Bernie?
Well, this is a very interesting question you have.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a life coach. So we always talk about questions like this. And for me, one of my biggest problems is sometimes I tend to find my fault rather than what I have achieved.
Okay.
And I think in one way, you can say it's humility, but in the other way, it's about confidence of what you have achieved too.
Mm.
So to get to that balance as you age, it's an interesting exercise.
Correct.
It's an interesting journey for me. So in a way, yes, I'm still exploring. Now, what does success mean to me now at 53? It's really about finding that peace of mind and happiness in life. So I can sleep at night, things being simple, and I still have the passion and satisfaction once something is done.
Okay.
Because without that, it's a waste of time, honestly. And now sometimes I can get it from reading the Obama book recently, or from reading a sci-fi. I love reading, you can tell.
Yeah.
Or I just cycled 36K the other day on the bicycle path out here. I had fun. I climbed a mountain yesterday. It was fun. So what does success mean? Well, it means a lot more now to me.
Well said.
Than I was 25 years ago when I was a young entrepreneur. That money, success, fame, those things become very important. Recognition. Of course, being a family business, recognition from your parents and from family became kind of quite important.
Correct.
Now, honestly, it's not that I don't care about what they think.
Mm.
I think I can be a judge of myself right now, whether I've done a good job or not, right? Which I don't, by the way, all the time. I screw up also.
Okay.
But I also find little things in life that I celebrate, that I enjoy. And those are as important sometimes as these monetary value or these recognition from someone else. Been there, done that. You know, it doesn't really last that long.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So, Bernie, my last question to you now, and this is for the thousands of young people who will be hearing your words of wisdom. What would your advice be to a young entrepreneur who's starting off on their journey with a young startup?
Well, I think number one is when you're young, keep your mind open. Right? There are things that happen very quickly. There are lessons to learn, there are mistakes to make, people to meet. Keep your mind open. You never know. I'm very lucky in my life. I met a few mentors that actually gave me a lot of opportunities, but also a lot of wisdom that I learned. I also keep my mind open because there are certain things I've done that didn't work, and I'm able to move to something that will work. So that's number one. Number two, I think a lot of younger, well, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of people in general tend to look at short-term gain. Right. So what is it for me now? In it for me now, right? Sometimes you play the medium and the long game as well, right? You need to look further down the road and say, hey, if I do this, maybe I will gain something, but maybe not, but I know this is the right thing to do, right? The third thing is you need to be a learner. Because even with open mind and everything around you, if you're not going out to seek and learn and want to develop and want to do better and satisfy what you have, I would say that's almost a recipe for failure in a way. And the last thing is failure, actually. I think everyone makes mistakes. I make so many mistakes. I mean, I can write a book in my life. Now looking back, I look back not with regrets, but with a mind to learn from them, lessons. If you make the mistakes once, okay, twice, fine. But the third time, it's my bad. I have no one else to blame.
I agree.
So not afraid to make mistakes. Recognize those mistakes. But most importantly, be honest with those mistakes, right? Because I see people over the years would tell themselves, yeah, no, it's a mistake, but you know, I have 3,000 reasons to why this happened. It's not me. You know, the world is falling apart. The partner is not good, blah, blah, blah. I don't do that. I because those are not going to benefit me, right? I look at what else I can do differently and be honest with myself when I do that. And sometimes they're very ugly truth. That you wake up in the middle of the night, you're like, I screw up. You know, that's it. Let's accept it. And then, because if not, then you will repeat that mistake again.
Yeah. Very well said. Buddy, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you and CompuTime and everything else you're doing lots of success.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.